All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the American Vindicta Show. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. Today we have with us again, Chris Pinto. This is episode 123. This is going to be shown on the podcast for GS Radio, KYH. It'll also be on the Rumble and YouTube, so make sure you check it out. If we go a little bit longer than an hour, the rest of this will be found on the YouTube and Rumble platforms. We have a lot to talk about, and instead of giving you a bunch of ads and a bunch of other stuff, I just want to get straight into this conversation with Chris, because we're going to talk about Civil War, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Jesuits. And I don't know that much about it. Chris is the expert here. But for about the first 30 minutes, Chris, let's talk about a civil war in this country. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, that's a good question. It's a very powerful question. I think most of us, any of us who know anything about war, and if we study the history, I've never actually been in a war. You've been in war. I've studied war, and I remember the thing that troubles me about what's happening in our country is if you study the American Revolution, our forefathers knew that war was coming years before it happened. They talked about it. They wrote about it. You have, for example, the Reverend Elijah Fish. He's preaching a sermon on the art of war, lawful and necessary to a Christian people, in the year 1773. So the war had not officially begun at that point, but everybody knew that it was coming for years before it happened. Same thing happened at the time of the American Civil War. People were warning about a civil war in this country 10 years or more before it happened. You go read some of the writings of General Sherman, back when he was a younger man, before the war broke out. There were people in the South that were trying to, or one of his friends, rather, was kind of grandstanding about the idea of war and taking it lightly. And Sherman wrote him a letter and said, "You have no idea what you're talking about." Basically, I'm paraphrasing him. But he's warning him. He's saying, you know, war is devastating for a country. This is not a good idea. It's actually trying to discourage it. And I can't help but look at, especially when we're talking about modern warfare. We talk about modern warfare. Yeah, I grew up for many years back in the 70s in Germany because my dad was in the U.S. Army. We were stationed over there. But I know a lot of people have seen just countless hours of footage from World War II. Europe was completely devastated by bombing and by the war. I mean, it was mass. I mean, beautiful cities. Cities that had architecture that went back centuries, and yet they were devastated by the bombing raids and this kind of thing. Right now, Ukraine looks like an absolute nightmare. The buildings, the cities, everything is absolutely devastated. I was reading an article. There were these survivalist guys. They had gone over into the Balkans, into that region, because they wanted a kind of a real life survivalist type experience. And so they went to a city that had been devastated by war. And the guy writing the article wrote about it. And he said when he came back, he had a very different view. He said the situation was far worse than he imagined, never realized that the infrastructure would be so completely destroyed and damaged, and that there would be so much devastation. And I think it compels me anyway to say to others, we should do all that we can in our country to prevent a civil war from happening. There are people who have been predicting it. People were predicting it 10, 15 years ago. There have been international authors and professors and things like that who have written articles. And these guys are supposedly experts in history and politics and so on. And they've been predicting that a civil war is going to happen here in the United States. You and I were talking about right before the program began about this new documentary by Dinesh D'Souza, 2,000 Mules. Everybody that I've seen review that film, I've not seen the film myself. I've seen the previews, I've seen the overviews, and I've heard a number of discussions on it. I'm looking forward to watching it. I just haven't had the opportunity. But everything I've heard about it, everybody is saying that there is irrefutable proof that election fraud happened in 2020. That's what people are arguing, that Dinesh D'Souza has the goods. He's got all the information, and he worked with a team of people, the True the Vote team. They had been gathering this data, and Dinesh D'Souza brought it together. I'm not seeing the film. I don't know all the details, but if that's true, and if this film gains more and more momentum and more Americans are convicted that outright fraud was carried out in the 2020 election, and it was overwhelming fraud, that I think is going to, it's just going to increase the indignation of many Americans. I think certainly Republicans and conservatives and so on, but to a certain extent, I think liberals who actually care about the country, and I think there are some who do, are going to recognize that our whole system is compromised. If our voting system has been taken over by communists and globalists, if they're the ones who are deciding who our leaders are, then we have then the words "we the people" no longer has any meaning. You know, the whole concept of government by consent is out the window. It's gone at that point. Personally, I think that what's preventing our country from being pushed down the path of some other countries that are farther along, like what we've seen in Australia, where they've literally they've rounded people up and put them in these camps for quarantine and that kind of thing. As Carrie Lake said in one of her interviews, she said, if not for the Second Amendment, our country would be in much, much deeper trouble than we are. But now we've got a guy in the White House, Biden. Biden in the White House has repeatedly threatened the Second Amendment. And I think the indignation is going to build nationwide, because here you've got a guy that many people believe should not be in the White House. He doesn't have a right to be there because he was not lawfully elected. And here he's threatening a fundamental right that's been in this country for more than 400 years. Because the right to bear arms doesn't begin with the Second Amendment. It began, you know, it was brought here from England by our ancestors. The Puritans maintained it, not just as a right, but as a duty. I think I mentioned on your last program how during the Puritan era, if you showed up at church without a gun, you had to pay a fine. You were fined if you were not armed. And we talk about in our film, True Christian History of America, we actually quote one of the laws from the colonies back then, that every man, you know, is going to have a pistol, a rifle, or whatever it was, but had to be armed. It was your duty to protect your family, your community, and your country. That's how they saw it. So now we have people in power who are threatening that. And I know you mentioned the Jesuits at the top of the show, and while we may talk more about them later, one thing that I want to interject here that could be a tipping point for our country: the Jesuits published an article years ago, back in 2011, I think it was, in their publication called America Magazine, and the headline of the article was "Repeal the Second Amendment." Not just get rid of the AR-15s or something, but repeal the Second Amendment. In other words, get rid of the amendment entirely.
What would be the reason for that?
Well, they of course, they make the standard arguments of morality, and we have to do it to protect people because too many people are being harmed by guns. You and I know that's simply it's just a bad argument. It's a very, very, for a whole variety of reasons. But in the article, they talk about envisioning, well, one, they admit that the Catholic bishops going back to the 1970s published a document back then calling for the removal of handguns, all handguns to be removed and eradicated from the country. Now, when they want the handguns, brother, that means they really want everything. And this goes back to the 70s. And here then in America Magazine, which is very influential because the Jesuits are very, very influential in our government. Joe Biden goes to a Jesuit church in Washington, D.C. Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner put the first Jesuit priest in power as the chaplain of the House of Representatives. Okay. Dr. Fauci is a Jesuit. Dr. Birx, his sidekick, the scarf lady, is a Jesuit. She was sworn into office by a Jesuit priest. Redfield, who was the head of the Centers for Disease Control when all the coronavirus stuff happened, is a Jesuit. Bill and Melinda Gates. Melinda Gates has a Jesuit in her family. They give millions of dollars a year to the Jesuit order through their Cristo Rey education system here in our country. And the list goes on and on. The CIA is jokingly called by Catholics, and you can go look this up. Anybody go look this up online. Jokingly called the Catholic Intelligence Agency because it has been dominated by Catholics since the days of Wild Bill Donovan back during World War II. He was the founder of the OSS. He was a Knight of Malta. There is a book called American Democracy in the Vatican where they actually have a photograph in the book of Donovan, who was the founder of the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, that then becomes the CIA. It's important for people to remember that it was the OSS that smuggled tens of thousands of Nazi war criminals out of Europe after the war. And it all begins to make sense once you realize the connection between the Vatican, the OSS, you know, Donovan was running the OSS. And then, of course, you've got MI6 over in Britain. All three were involved in smuggling these Nazis out, as some 60,000 of them. That's admitted.
That's how Dr. Mengele got out. Dr. Mengele got out by a cardinal in the Vatican who actually, if you're familiar with the German rat lines, the Vatican was actually a huge part of the German rat lines that was funneling the Nazi war criminals out of the theater that they were in, so Germany. And then from there, they would bring them down to Italy and Spain and to like the Canary Islands, and then they would ship them across and funnel them any way that they could by vessel. And there was a cardinal that was distinctly a part of giving Joseph Mengele his new ID, his new identification, housing him, feeding him, and then hooking him up with people to meet whenever he went down into, I believe it was Argentina, maybe. And then thus we have the place where there's the world's largest conglomeration of twins being born at, which was one of Dr. Mengele's pet peeves, was twins. I've always had a problem with the Vatican. I don't care if you're Catholic or Baptist or whatever. I have a problem with the Vatican because
the problem politically is not really Catholic people.
And
many Catholics, I think most American Catholics, are very, very loyal to our country and they love our Constitution as much as we do and would lay down their lives for our nation.
Absolutely.
I really believe that.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a Catholic family, I should say. I'm Protestant today, but half my family is still Catholic. I should say that. But there's a difference between Catholics and Jesuits and the Vatican. The Jesuits are like the Vatican CIA. But I wanted to mention this one thing, if I can, just on the Vatican, just to tie it in. While Bill Donovan, late in life, appears at the Vatican and receives the Pope's highest honor for a lifetime of service to the papacy. Now, this is a guy who founded the OSS. And you can read about that in the book, American Democracy in the Vatican, by Dr. Stephen Mumford. And that book you can find online. But the thing that's so significant about this, where like the Second Amendment is concerned, the Second Amendment was ultimately... It grew out of the English Bill of Rights of 1689, because that's what was first written down. And what happened was the Jesuits in England, this is very well known, brother, the Jesuits in England pushed King James II to disarm the Protestants in England, to take their guns away. And the Protestants were the majority at the time. And he did. He disarmed them. And that was one of the things that led to the Glorious Revolution of 1688.
I'm going to pause you right there, everybody, while we're listening. While Chris is telling us this history, be thinking about our current times, because there's too many anomalies here that Chris is already going over. It pertains to us now. So continue, Chris, please.
No, absolutely. And here's the thing, whether we know the history or not, I guarantee you the Jesuits and the Vatican and the popes and the cardinals, they know this history very, very well. Mm-hmm. They know that really it was the Jesuits and their Counter-Reformation. They had this whole pattern of disarming Protestants, like right before the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre, the Protestants surrendered their arms when they went into Paris, the Huguenots. Then they were slaughtered afterwards. Then you have the Irish massacre of 1641. The Protestants were disarmed in Northern Ireland. Then they were massacred by the Jesuits and their Catholic mobs up there. So when King James II goes to disarm them in England in 1688, they knew they were being set up. And they said, you know, we're not going to wait around to find out what happens. So they sent letters to William and Mary. Mary was an heir to the throne of England, and had them come in with their army, and they invaded the country and they drove out King James II. That was the Glorious Revolution. But then they established the English Bill of Rights that contains the right to bear arms, 1689. That was the right that we were fighting for in 1775. So you see, this is where the Second Amendment comes from specifically. That's the history. I personally believe that's why it's so significant that you have the Jesuits and the Catholic bishops, not Catholics, not Catholic people. I think the leadership, the hierarchy, the Vatican operatives.
That's the same thing that we talk about within the government with the regular federal employees. And then you have the deep state. Now, don't get me wrong. There's still plenty of problems with regular federal employees as well. It last time I was there, it was like half and half. Half patriots, half went with Biden. I think it's very much the same thing. But wouldn't you say that the Jesuits have their hands in almost everything that they can have their hands in at this point, from the military, psychological operations, we'll just say bio warfare and leave it at that. Do you believe that they have literally infiltrated everything?
I think every place of power. I can tell you this, to my knowledge, and I researched this a few months ago, there's only one Jesuit in the entire state of Tennessee, where I live. I live here in Tennessee, right? One Jesuit in Tennessee. I've lived, brother, all over the country. I lived everywhere from Miami, Florida, lived in Northern Alabama, lived in Georgia and Atlanta at one point, went to school in North Carolina, lived on the east and west side of Manhattan for several years, lived for 10 years out in LA. As kids, we lived in New Jersey and Texas, and now been in Tennessee. I have never been around Jesuits. I've never known, the average person that I know does not personally know any Jesuits, because they're pretty rare in many parts, or I would say most parts of the country, but they are heavily concentrated in Washington, D.C., because that's the center of power. And we have a book that we carry on our website from the year 1888. It's called Washington in the Lap of Rome by Justin D. Fulton, who was a minister in the 19th century. What happened to me probably about 6 months ago, 7 months ago, I've told my audience for years that it's provable that these tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, et cetera, began rewriting our history books back in the 1920s. That was discovered by Congress in the 1950s. So I've told people, if you want to get real history, you have to go pre-1920, because they started changing the records after that. Not that all records are bad, but that's where they began making the changes. So about 6-7 months ago, one of our listeners starts sending me dozens at first, and then hundreds of books from the 1800s, books, pamphlets, tracts, etc., things that were published back then in these big boxes. And I finally had to write him. He's a great guy. Love him dearly. And he's one of our supporters. He supported us for many years. He's great. But I had to tell him, I said, brother, you just can't send me any more books. I don't have anywhere to put them. But I was being overwhelmed with all these books. But the books he was sending me were from the 1800s, from the 19th century. And most all of them had something to do with Rome, the Vatican, and the Jesuits infiltrating and taking control of the United States of America.
Really? There was that much conversation then?
That much more, way more than most people have any idea about. Now, I knew about some of this. And I knew that there were a number of books, because you got quotes from people like John Adams, when Adams is writing to Thomas Jefferson, and he says, because the Jesuits had been, they'd been kicked out of the countries of Europe like 39 times. Then they were abolished by the Pope in 1773. Then they're reinstated in 1815. And then John Adams, when that happens, writes a letter to Thomas Jefferson and says, I do not like the reappearance of the Jesuits. He says, I know of no body of men more deserving of eternal perdition on earth or in hell than the Sons of Loyola, because they were founded by Ignatius Loyola. So that's the kind of dialogue you have from well-known figures historically where the order is concerned. You see what I'm saying? And I got to tell you, brother, I cover the Jesuits and the Counter-Reformation in one of my films, A Lamp in the Dark, The Untold History of the Bible. We have a big, long section in there about the Counter-Reformation. And that got a lot of attention. I gave presentations on it. I mentioned them in several of my films. Well, then I spent 5 years working on True Christian History of America. I didn't talk about the Jesuits in that film. I was ready to leave the whole thing alone. I didn't want to, you know, I felt like I'd said my piece. Let's move on to some other areas of research. That's what I did. And then all of this stuff happens with coronavirus. And I'm watching President Trump, who had been a very, very strong leader. I'm watching Trump, and they're saying, okay, we need 30 days to flatten the curve, and we need to shut down businesses for the time being and let this thing pass. And President Trump gets up and he says at one point, I think this was in March of 2020, he said, well, we're going to get back to normal by about Easter. That'll be great. Resurrection Sunday, that'll be a great time for us to get back to normal, and we'll all just go back. That should be enough time for us to get through all of this. Well, then 2 minutes later, this little guy with glasses walks over with salt and pepper hair in front of the podium. And he says, no, I don't think we're going to be able to get back to normal by Easter. This is going to go on through the summer and into the fall and probably into next year. And this Dr. Fauci, right? Dr. Fauci decides that no, the president is wrong. And this is going to go on a whole lot longer than he thought. And I thought, now surely Trump is going to fire this guy. And no, he didn't fire him. He didn't let him go. Fauci kept his job. And then I start reading up on Dr. Fauci. And then I go on the internet. I'm like, who is this guy Fauci? And I'm typing in, I'm doing my research, and I'm stumbling upon YouTube videos and podcasts with headlines like, oh, today on our show, we interview Dr. Anthony Fauci on how did your Jesuit education prepare you for coronavirus? These are some of the headlines. And then you come to find out that Fauci is, he's very, very involved with the order. I mean, he's got all of these photographs with himself and the Jesuits, and he himself is considered a Jesuit because they educated him from high school and through college. And then I find out that Dr. Birx, his sidekick, she was sworn into her office by a Jesuit priest. So as much as I wanted to leave this whole issue and just press on into new territory, I was somewhat overwhelmed by the network there in Washington involving all of this stuff where COVID is concerned. And then you find out that they have the, because the Jesuits, a lot of people don't realize, you know the term social justice, don't you? Okay. The term social justice was first published by a Jesuit priest named Luigi Taparelli in the year 1843.
Get out of town.
Yep. That is their doctrine. Okay. They are the authors of the term and the doctrine social justice. And now you go and you research them. They have the Global Jesuit Vaccine Initiative. And now they're talking about vaccine justice. Vaccine justice, instead of social justice, it's vaccine justice to make sure everybody gets vaccinated across the planet. You see what I'm saying? And then once you factor in Bill Gates, who's connected with these guys, and he's giving them millions of dollars a year through his foundation, and the links to the Vatican. Now, I can't say it's all the Vatican or all the Jesuits, because we know with Rockefeller, with George Soros, with World Economic Forum, United Nations, World Health Organization, all of these globalist groups are intertwined. But here in America, I think the Vatican has their tentacles around the federal government. In fact, when Biden was officially sworn in, there were Catholics, conservative Catholics, who made videos where they said they were actually concerned. They said, do you realize this is the first time in our history that every branch of our government has not been controlled by Protestants at all? The Catholics are controlling the Supreme Court. 6 out of 9 judges are basically Catholic. The Congress, right? Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House. And then now the executive, Joe Biden, who's a Catholic, who goes to a Jesuit church there in D.C. And conservative Catholics were alarmed at what is happening, because they know the Vatican's agenda, and they know that the Vatican right now with Francis there is a globalist organization. There's no question. They're dedicated to globalism.
So with that, you'll probably find this funny. I had an old teammate of mine just sent me this. An archbishop in California has banned Nancy Pelosi from taking communion due to the abortion stance right now.
Right.
So, I mean, there's an obvious brewing up of an internal conflict. And you have orders that are vying right now for power between the old world order, the new world order, between the Jesuits and the new world order religions that are coming out of this world right now. I think one of the precipices that we get to is the eventuality of a civil conflict, not protesting, you know, not the riots. That's child's play compared to what war is. Mm-hmm. I think that's an eventuality, because man, if you look at it, they're hitting everything. The white supremacy stuff, the inoculations, and we'll leave it at that, because if not, YouTube will kill me. and then you have the racial tension that we just cannot drop that. You know, there's always the racial tension, the inequality for all the fairy tale creatures that are out there who wants to be equal. And then you have the political drama. Stuff like 2,000 mules, proof of election fraud. You know, when I was working for the federal government, we were watching all this happening. We were also rotating in and out of Portland at that time. And we're watching all this stuff occurring. And we're saying, you know, this is really being guided. We know the direction. Sitting around a bunch of supervisors, we're sitting around, we're predicting what's going to happen. We almost all knew there was going to be fraud. I mean, who didn't? Mm-hmm. And then we almost all knew that the moment Biden got elected, that November 4th, it was going to go quiet. And it did. I mean, Chris, we were running and gunning in Portland and all, and not just Portland, but all around the country. Portland was a major epicenter. That's why I talk about it so much, because when we talk about Civil War, it starts in Portland. That is where you have a entity, a group of people, true domestic terrorism, funded by portions of our government's officials and government and state government and local government, to literally, like the Nazi brown shirts, harass to the point that it became a physical conflict, to the point that it actually became a deadly conflict with assassination right there on the streets of America. And it was left versus right. The last time we had something like that similar was the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And back then it wasn't a Republican versus Democrat. You know, that really wasn't exactly what
actually, brother, I would have to object to that. I would have to disagree.
I'm not saying it wasn't either or, but it was the Democrats who fired the bullet at Lincoln.
There's a political cartoon that I would highly recommend, and most people don't know about this, but I would highly recommend people look up to understand what happened with the first American Civil War. There's a political cartoon called Slavery Forced Down the Throat of a Free Soiler. That's the name of the cartoon. And if you type that into Google and you look it up, you'll see a picture of an oversized man being pulled back over a table. And there's these Democrat politicians with a slave by the legs, and they're forcing this slave down the throat of this guy and choking him. And he's yelling, "Help, murder, help," this kind of thing. Okay. Because what was happening, and you go study episodes like Bloody Kansas or Bleeding Kansas. Kansas at the time was one of the new territories that was being developed. And these people who were developing new parts of the country into states, many of them, and they were called free soilers because they did not want their soil or their state to be tainted with slavery. They didn't agree with slavery. They thought, okay, you want slavery in Virginia or wherever, you go ahead and have it over there. We don't want it in our state. We want to be without the slave trade here. Okay. Kind of like the abortion issue. You have some states who say, hey, we don't want to provide abortion services or whatever. And then what was happening was the Democratic Party politically was coming in and they were saying, you don't have any choice. You must have slavery in your state. You must allow it to go on.
Okay, so we had a little bit of a technical issue. I guess the Pope was listening and shut off the signal for a second. So we're going to pick back up on a conversation where we were a while ago about Civil War. And you had a very particular thought about Ukraine and how it pertained potentially to America for a Civil War. You want to discuss that?
Well, I'm concerned about the situation in Ukraine because it seems like there are so many different. One, I was talking about this back in 2013, long before we got to the point we're at, when this whole thing first happened back in 2013 with the Obama administration, who had a lot to do with instigating the problem. They were supporting it. And the arguments back then were that the reason the media hated Vladimir Putin was because Putin rejected the radical left, rejected things like LGBT, rejected things like gay marriage and anything having to do with transgenderism. And that for that reason, the European Union was that much more against him because the EU promotes all of that. And the real conflict back in 2013 began because the people in Ukraine, these radical leftists and these neo-Nazis, they wanted to join the Ukraine to the European Union. That's what they wanted. But it's so that this whole left-wing globalist agenda could move forward in that part of the world. And the traditional Russians in the East did not want to be joined to the Ukraine. They, in other words, they didn't want the radical left-wing agenda that the European Union has, where they get into the schools, where they, you know, one, they're teaching now transgenderism to the kids, just like we're seeing over here, but it's even worse over in Western Europe. Katie Hopkins, the journalist, was reporting a few years ago that the schools in England can now transition your child, your underage child, from being a boy to a girl or a girl to a boy without parental consent. And this is what she said about probably about 2 years ago. And that that same standard was coming to America. Well, this is what the EU brings to the table. When people are a member of the European Union, they promote all of these things, and they promote the mass importation of Muslims from these third world countries. And a lot of people have forgotten that it was a Muslim journalist who provoked the conflict back in 2013 with what they call the Maidan uprising. And I would highly recommend people watch the film Ukraine on Fire. If you've not already seen it, I highly recommend seeing it, because it's obvious that the radicals that took over the government of Ukraine were these radical left-wing, pro-European Union, pro-globalist groups. And there wasn't just one of them. There were a whole collection of them that all came together and did it. And they're the ones who drove out the democratically elected guy. Now, whenever you talk about this, people say, oh, so does that mean you're supporting Vladimir Putin and Russia? No, not necessarily. Not at all. I mean, Putin is former KGB. Putin has his own issues and his own problems. But they are clearly in opposition to the globalist movement there in Western Europe. And part of the reason...
Can I pause you for a second? Because sure. You made a very good point about that, Chris. They threaten by proxy the left, the media, and the right, because plenty of the right supports what we're doing in Ukraine. They threaten you by proxy that if you don't align with this group over here, then you align with Putin. And no, we don't. I don't align with the third most corrupt government in the world. Mm-hmm. It was Biden and Obama who said that. I don't align with one of the world's most leading countries for child sex trafficking. And I actually know of a few guys that are operating right now in Ukraine that are rescuing children and trying to get them out of Ukraine. And man, the stories. And my hat's off to all those. I met one of the guys at Timothy Alberino's Birthright Conference. And, you know, I think they're doing the Lord's work. They're going into the enemy territory and stealing the children, more or less, from this corrupt government. If you know anything about human trafficking, if you've ever been to the Texas border, you'll know why my heart is on fire about that, because it's truly a tragedy that the world is ignoring. It is to me close to how many people ignored what happened with the Holocaust. That's how bad the sex slaves and the trade of that is going on, and it's all around the world and connected. I have an idea on this. I think one of the reasons why we have this problem with Ukraine and people not wanting to align with Ukraine, Chris, is because people are now awake enough that they don't believe the lies that the government's telling them or the Ukrainian government's telling them. They don't believe EU. They don't care for NATO anymore. It's strange how people have grown wary of the false patriotism that happens to, align themselves with political parties, the right and the left. There's plenty of false patriotism, like Lindsey Graham saying, hey, will someone please just assassinate Vladimir Putin? Well, were you trying to start a damn international war? You know, sweetheart Lindsey, you're not going to grab your rifle and kit and get out there and fight. But they want guys like me to. See, and that's where I get very emotional about this. Been there, done that already. This country doesn't need to turn into Ukraine. But I think if we don't stop it, and I'll give it back to you, we're going to end up looking like Ukraine.
Well, they're right now, I'm not sure if what they're doing, if what they're doing on Ukraine specifically, other than the fact that they want to give them $40 billion, which is utterly ridiculous. I mean, there's a quote from Rand Paul where at least he was quoted saying that we're going to have to borrow money from China to give $40 billion to Ukraine. I mean, it's absurd. With our debt level that we have, we've got more than $20 trillion worth of national debt, and they want to give that much money to the Ukraine, to their war chest, so that what? So that this conflict with Russia can be promoted. I've said to people, look, if you're against Vladimir Putin, great, I understand. Former KGB, lots of problems there, because Russia's got their own problems, but don't go and turn and support Zelensky and these guys, because these guys are thugs and murderers, and that's provable. And they're not noble. This is not about a freedom fight with the Ukrainians. What's happening is you have people who want to join the Ukraine to the European Union. And the European Union, if the European Union gets what they want, they will destroy Western civilization eventually. They'll destroy Western Europe through the LGBT movement, because with that, they are using that as an instrument to outlaw Christianity. You've got the cases where Christians are being prosecuted over there because they have just stood up and spoken and read out loud what the Bible says about homosexual practices. Okay? And if you quote the scripture on that, that is now in many parts of Western Europe a punishable offense. And then you add to that the fact that they are deliberately, they brought in some 50 million Muslims into Western Europe, and they want to bring more. And they're letting them set up their Sharia courts. You have people warning that France is going to become a Muslim country in the next 20 years, that England over the next 50 years or however long. I mean, what they're doing is generational. They are sowing seeds of treason and sedition and so on that they know are going to come to fruition, not in 2, 3, or 5 years, but really throughout the lifetime of the next generation. It's kind of like, you know, what we're working on a documentary right now called, it has to do with the Rees Committee. We've got a working title, which is the Rees Committee. But I just got to interview, the great, great legendary author, G. Edward Griffin, who wrote the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And he did the original interview with Norman Dodd, who was the director of research for the Rees Committee.
And that's the original, like, New World Order meeting there on Jekyll Island.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And G. Edward Griffin, he's legendary for that book. But he covered so many different topics in the 20th century and right up into modern times. And we posted our radio show with him. He's just absolutely great. He's 90 years old, brother, 90 years old, but he's still very, you know, still very, very bold, very alert, and a great American. But Norman Dodd, who Mr. Griffin interviewed before he died, Dodd was part of this congressional committee that uncovered the fact that these tax-exempt foundations, Ford, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and others, were part of a plot back in the 1920s, really even earlier than the 1920s, to get control of America's education system, to rewrite our history books, and through the schools, change the thinking of the average American away from the Bible and our Constitution toward Marxism, socialism, and communism, or what they called collectivism. That was the word that they used, collectivism. But they're really talking about communism. And that this was a deliberate plan that they set in motion about 1920 onward. So we look at where we are here in 2022. This plan for the overthrow of America goes back 100 years. You see what I'm saying? What they're doing through, just like what they did in our country, the European Union is laying the groundwork for the eventual overthrow, not just of any one country, but literally all of Western civilization. That is what I believe. And you've had many other voices who have been warning about this, that you bring 50 million Muslims in, you have them build mosques all over the place. You have them set up Sharia courts. You allow the laws to be changed systematically. This is how the Muslims took over Egypt. It's how they took over the Sudan. It's how they took over North Africa. It's how they took over most of Lebanon. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. They are laying the groundwork and trying to advance a very subversive movement aimed at replacing or overthrowing Christianity and replacing it with a system that's going to be some kind of a hybrid of socialism and Sharia law. And exactly what it's going to look like, I honestly don't know, brother. But I've studied this for years, and you can trace the roots of this whole movement back to the World War II era. And it's why the connection between the Nazis and the Muslims, the fact that Hitler worked with the Muslims, he had, I mean, get the book Islam and Nazi Germany's War by David Motadel, because he documents better than anybody else how the Nazis had tens of thousands of Muslims. They had their own SS unit called the SS Handschar, where their symbol was a swastika and a scimitar.
Yep.
Okay. This is why I remember when they had V-Day here somewhere in the last year, where we celebrate the victory during World War II. And Americans, you know, we're waving our flags. We're saying, praise the Lord. Thank God for the greatest generation. Meanwhile, you see the Muslims like Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, they're all gloomy. The mayor, Mayor Khan over there in London, not really happy about it, because they know historically that their Muslim ancestors sided with Adolf Hitler and worked with Hitler. I mean, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, al-Husseini, he was like a primary spokesman for Hitler. You can go online, find images of flags that were, I mean, this relationship was much, much deeper and more detailed and extensive than people realize. Flags with the Nazi symbols on it, the Iron Eagle, and it says Palestina on it, okay, for Palestine. And your Palestine police use the Nazi salute, the Heil Hitler, to this day. And they buy up copies of Mein Kampf and so on. That's why that connection is there. And I believe it has everything to do with why, after the war, those powers in Europe that were partial to Hitler reinvented themselves. Literally, the political party in Germany that gave Hitler his absolute power, the Catholic Center Party, became the CDU, which is the party of Angela Merkel. And, you know, she plays a key role bringing all these Muslims in to Germany and Western Europe. So I think they have a long-range plan, and the enemy is not just the principles of freedom. They know that the principles of freedom from Magna Carta to the English Bill of Rights and the U.S. Constitution ultimately have their point of origin in this book, brother, the Bible. Okay? Christianity. They're trying to overthrow Christianity. And that, I believe, is where all of this comes down. And the reason our ancestors developed things like freedom of speech. Freedom of speech begins with the preaching of the gospel. Yep. This goes back to when John Huss was burned at the stake for preaching, and that led to the Hussite Wars. It's one of the things we talk about in my film. The Hussites took up arms because they were not going to be silenced. They were not going to have anybody tell them they could not preach the word of God. Christ's command is go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature. So the idea, and Romans 13, which says government is to be the minister of God, and Psalm 149, which says the saints, all the saints, have the authority to take up arms and put down kings and princes if they have to execute the judgments of God against them. You see, our ancestors believe nobody has the authority to get in the way of the gospel, the preaching of the gospel.
So I want to comment on what you just said. that same order of people who have been in charge of this country for a long time in the background that are now in the foreground, I think are scared of a true Christian reformation when Christians really discover the power that God has given us on this planet. And if we really wanted to enforce God's word first, we would utterly destroy what you would call the modern day present government, because it is completely anti-Christ at this point, which also I believe is one reason, Chris, why we send so many funds, firearms, all different types of weaponry over to Ukraine, because we're propping up a neo-Nazi government.
Oh yeah. There's no question.
Yeah.
There's no question. I mean, the fact that the Azov battalion, and you've done a lot of research into that. You and I have talked about it. I think your research, I gotta be honest with you, brother, the research you've done into what went on in that region is some of the best I've heard. I think you need to talk about it. In fact, maybe we'll find a way to do a call where I can have you on my radio program, and then because I want to get you over to my audience as well.
Yeah.
Because that information is very, very powerful.
Started in 1947 with the OSS.
And most people don't know. They have no idea. But it's obvious that what's happening in Ukraine is engineered. I mean, there's more and more researchers, guys who have studied this for decades, who are coming out and saying, look, they're engineering World War III.
Yeah.
My very first film, my very first documentary was called Megiddo, The March to Armageddon, Bible Prophecy and the New World Order. And we talk about the outline of prophecy in the scripture. And then we talk about all of the historic evidence around one world government and this call for a new world order. We published that. We released it back in 2003, back at a time where if you use the term new world order, you would be dismissed as a conspiracy theorist by most people. But what was I going to say? When this whole idea of what did you say, brother? I lost my thought. Lost my train of thought.
More or less what we're getting down to is the people who are in our government now causing us all the problems are the same people who propped up and supported Nazi Germany, the same people who are supporting the invasion from the what people would say the horde across the world, which was the caliphate. And then they also support what's happening in the Azov area with the Azov battalion, the Nazis, the neo-Nazis that are there within the Ukrainian government. You can't separate them at this point. You know, if you take a big old wad of bubble gum and you just roll it around a bunch of trash, that's basically all of our politicians stuck together by the same thing. This same thing sticks them, the Jesuits, the neo-Nazis, the caliphate, the human sex trafficking. It's everything that we have a problem with is being pulled together through this gravitas, being pulled together and stuck together. And I firmly believe this is one of the many things that Satan is doing to this world, which is, once again, why Christians are always the target. It's not the Buddhist. It's not the Hindu. It's not the atheist. It's not the agnostic. It's not the people that want to get baptized by aliens. It is Christians who believe in their God, who believe every word that the Bible says. They don't add to or take away from.
Amen.
That is the person that they cannot allow to get into power. They cannot allow. It's why they don't want MAGA. It's why they call us ultra MAGA now. It's why DHS labeled us back in the early 2000s. If you were a Christian, white, liked your guns, or returning veteran, you were on the DHS bulletin for the National Terrorism Advisory. Now they're saying it again in February. If you're a domestic violent extremist, if you believe in misinformation, malinformation, disinformation, if you don't believe Biden's the president, if you don't believe Fauci, if you believe COVID's a bunch of crap, you're the enemy of the country. And I'll give this back to you, Chris. It's not that we, the people, are the enemy to the country. We, the people, are the enemy to them, the government, who has to stay in power.
Right. Well, I like to say that it's the people who are controlling our government, because I think of the government as really our constitutional republic, under God. Our republic, the framework of our republic, is not really the problem, in my opinion. It's the people who are controlling it.
Right.
I think that if we had the right people in power, we wouldn't have a lot of the problems we have. Now I have recovered my thought, brother. Sorry about that. Now, the reason I mentioned our film Megiddo was because in that film, we talk about this letter from back in the 19th century with Albert Pike, who's the founder of Scottish Rite Freemasonry, because not Masonry itself, but specifically the Scottish Rite and all the rituals and so on. But a letter supposedly from Albert Pike to a guy named Giuseppe Mazzini about a plan for three world wars. And that's one of the things we talked about in that film. And people have talked about this in kind of the underground of research about globalism. Is there really a plan for three world wars? And watching what's happening in the Ukraine right now, it looks like more and more the powers that be in our country and in Western Europe are provoking deliberately a third world war.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, sorry we had to cut this short. We only have 1 hour, and this ended up going about 1 hour and 15. So if you want to hear the rest of this cool interview, go to the Rumble channel, and you'll be able to hear the rest of it. Thank you very much for listening. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.